everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on harvesting rainwater when we come back. During the 1970s, an obscure black college professor down at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, while working on a grant, he developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. The plan was aimed at poor, rural, black landowners in the South who owned small acreages. The goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. It's called the Whatley Program. And the program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley Program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. The man's name was Professor Booker T. Whatley. Now, there are more than 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating here in the United States. And the law school has taken the Whatley Program and then added the 15 agricultural laws of the Bible and the 17 financial laws from the Scripture so that you can practice all of the laws of the United States, all the laws of your state and the Scripture, and make a good living for you and your family at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our $100,000 class is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of harvesting rainwater. Who in his right mind would want to do such a thing? You know, normal people want to harvest wheat, but they don't want to harvest rainwater. So we talked about this thing of drought. And what is a drought? A drought is a perception in your mind. There's no drought in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, for those people living there who are used to 50 inches of rain a year, when it rains 25 inches, you know, they say, we are in this god-awful severe drought. They're talking about evacuating cities down there. Now, conversely, I mentioned this last time, the people in Tucson, Arizona, hell, ain't seen 25 inches of rain in their entire history. They don't know what 25 inches is. Hell, in Wichita, Kansas, it only rains 20 inches a year. Now, the people in Wichita, Kansas are not preparing to evacuate Wichita because they've got less than 25 inches of rain a year. The people in Tucson, Arizona are not prepared to evacuate Tucson because they've only got 12 inches a year. The people in Las Vegas, who only have 7 inches a year, they're not getting ready to evacuate. Now, tragically, when we talk about this thing of water and water conservation, you know, it makes us all a little angry. I don't want to conserve water. And that's because we've always had plenty of it. We've been spoiled rotten. You know, when you're wealthy and you've got plenty of money, you know, you don't want to work. You know, that's for peons. Well, you know, there comes reality every once in a while. Now, looking back in history at the Colorado River Basin, I was reading an article here the other day. The Colorado River over the past 100 years has been running on average about 15 million acre feet a year. Now it's down to about a third that, about 5 million acre feet. In fact, it hasn't run this low for 400 years. Back around 1500, when the Spanish, you know, were discovering Colorado and discovering Arizona and Mexico, you know, in the 15th and 16th century, when the Spanish explorers were traipsing around the southwestern United States, the Colorado River was running around what it is today, around 5 million acre feet. They weren't complaining about drought. Now, you know, when you're used to 15 million acre feet and it gets cut down to 5, well, you know, that's less, but that doesn't mean that it's drought. There's still water running down the river. There just isn't as much. And the people in Tucson, Arizona, who are living on 12 inches of rain a year, compared to the people in Wichita, Kansas, they're living on about 24 inches a year, the people in Wichita have got twice as much rain. Well, and they grow twice as much wheat, too. Yeah, I don't grow very much wheat down there in Tucson, Arizona. They grow other things, but they're not growing wheat. There's people down there that take baths and take showers in Tucson, just like they do in Wichita, just like they do in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a matter of, can we get by on less? Is there a way that we could live in Atlanta, Georgia on less than 50 inches a year? And the answer is yes, you can. So I drew a little parallel. I said, you know, we Americans are used to electricity, and we use lots of it. I mean, you know, we don't turn the lights off when we walk out of the room. Hell, when I walk out of this office, these lights are going to be on all day. Am I going to be in this room? No. But when I come through the room, you know, which is going to be 5 or 6 times a day, I don't want to flip on the light every time I walk in here. So at night, I lock up at night, and I turn off all the lights. So from about 10 o'clock at night until about 5 o'clock in the morning, the lights will be off about 7 hours a day. Then I'm going to come down here at 5 o'clock into my office, and I'm going to flip on the lights. But, you know, when I finish this program, I'm going to go upstairs and eat breakfast. And then I'm going to go out and milk the cow, feed the cows, maybe feed the bull, and let the chickens out, and do some other things, you know, break some ice on the water troughs. But I'm not going to turn the lights off when I walk out of my office at 8 o'clock. And the lights are going to be on here all day long. Now, you know, that's because the electricity is so cheap that it's not important to me to turn it off. And water in this country has been so cheap and so plentiful, there isn't anybody that's going to turn it off. All right, now let's welcome reality. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that the price of electricity doubles. I'm not sure that I would turn my lights off if the price of electricity doubled. But what if it quadrupled or sextupled? There's a point in time, children, when I would turn the light off. I don't know where that is exactly, but I can tell you plainly that if the price of electricity were costing me $10 an hour, I would come down here, turn the lights on, I would talk real fast, see if I could get out of here in 59 minutes, turn the lights off. And then I would add that to the cost of producing a radio program, cost $10 for electric power. Now, let me tell you a story here about telephones. When I was a kid, we used to call my Uncle Carol. It was during World War II. It cost us $3.72 or 3 cents, I believe it was, for 3 minutes from Eureka, California to Orlando, Florida. Now, my granddad was the mill superintendent, and he got paid $1.75 an hour. I mean, he got big wages. Other people at that time were working for 80, 90 cents an hour. If you were getting, I think minimum wage was 50 cents an hour in 1943. Hell, if you were making $1 an hour, you were in Fat City. My granddad's making $1.75 an hour. He's the superintendent. He's management. So, you know, when we wanted to call my Uncle Carol, we're talking about he had to work for 2 hours to make enough money to make a 3-minute telephone call, which, by the way, took about 20 minutes to make a 3-minute telephone call. And then at the end of the 3 minutes, the operator would come on the line. Your time is about up, 15 seconds. And you have to talk real fast and say, goodbye, Uncle Carol. Goodbye, Aunt Dorothy. I love you. And then hang up. And, you know, the line goes dead. You get 3 minutes, and that's it. Today, I can pick up my telephone and talk to somebody just as clear as a bell in Adelaide, Australia. And then it doesn't cost me more than 5 cents a minute. I mean, I can do radio programs for hours at a time. I get on the air, and I can talk on a radio station in Denver, Colorado for an hour or two. And it costs me, what, 5 cents a minute? $3 an hour. Now, I'm used to that. Now, if I had to go back to paying, you know, my God, $3, that's $1 a minute, you know, $3.75. That's more than $1 a minute. Why, I'd choke up and cry. Now, we Americans are spoiled rotten. And we've been raised like a bunch of spoiled brats. And we've had all the lollipops and ice cream cones that we can eat. And all of a sudden somebody said to us, you can't have a lollipop. No. And now we're about ready to throw a wall-eyed fit, you know, like some little kid, you know, in the supermarket. You see them every once in a while. They're down there screaming and crying, I want Captain Crunch. I want Captain Crunch. You know, if the old lady says, no, I'm going to give it to you, they throw themselves down on the floor and kick and scream and yell. Ever seen that? That's the way Americans are. So down in the southeastern United States, I don't know how often this happens, it doesn't rain. Now, there's a couple of statements in the Bible. I thought I'd share these with you. Al Gore says it's global warming. God says, I give you rain in due season, and I withhold the rain. So if you're a religious kook like I am, you look at the Bible and you say, oh, the reason you people down in the southeast are having this drought, the reason Dad said you can't have the Captain Crunch is because you've been acting like a bunch of spoiled brats, and so he's going to take it away from you for a while. See if he can straighten you out. And then, of course, Al Gore comes along and says, well, it's your fault, and you're burning all this coal over here, and you got to learn to do without coal and electric power and so on. I told you here a couple of weeks ago, Mount Pinatubo, in 2 years, put more carbon dioxide into the air in one eruption than all of the activities of mankind over the past 5,000 years. Global warming is a fact, but global warming is coming from God and sunspots on the sun. And it is true that every time we burn a train load of coal, we're adding more greenhouse gases, which means we're throwing a little bit of gasoline on the fire, but it doesn't amount to that much. So I wouldn't get too concerned about it. But if you think you got drought today, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's going to get worse. We're going to have drought until it causes famine. You're going to have famine until it causes cannibalism. So I thought, well, okay, maybe it's time that we wake up and pay attention, at least some of us, and then say, look, just because it's only going to rain half as much down in Alabama this year than it has in normal times, does not mean that we're all going to die. And just because the price of electricity doubles, quadruples, or sextuples doesn't mean that we have to do without electricity. It means we have to turn the damn lights off. That's what that means. Now, just because it doesn't rain and I don't have as much water doesn't mean that we can't have water. So last time I broke off, I said, here's a couple that bought one of those junk lots out in the middle of the desert where they don't have a well. I mean, these people haven't got a crummy well. And they're living on 14 inches of rainwater a year and doing quite nicely. Now, if these people can live on 14 inches of rainwater a year, in Arizona, you people can live on 14 inches of rainwater a year in Atlanta, Georgia, or Birmingham, Alabama. It is true, you've never had to do that in your entire lifetimes. Well, wake up to reality, because you might need to. Now, here's the story. Now, listen to this. These people are out here in the desert, and it says right here, no utilities were installed. There's no utilities. There's no electric power. There's no wells. There's no pumps. And then few sites were ever developed. At sites that were eventually developed, the neighbors run generators 24/7 for electricity, and nearly all truck in their water, ignoring rain that falls freely from the sky. Matt and Mary generate most of their electricity from solar panels on their roof, and aside from drinking water, they have had to haul in water only once during a five-month drought. They had a five-month drought and they had to haul in water. Now, the reason they're not drinking the water is because it comes off their roof. Their roof has paint on it. They didn't like the idea of drinking the water that has the paint on it. Now, there's solutions to that problem. You can have tile roofs. You can have other kinds of materials for roofs. You can drink that water. Now, back in the ancient times, they used to have cisterns hewed out of solid rock in Jerusalem. They've got the archaeological sites over there, where they had water stored for thousands of people for months on end. In other words, you could lay siege to a big city like Babylon or Cairo or Jerusalem, and you couldn't get those people to say uncle because they didn't have water. Now, here in the United States, you see, we've been used to all this water for so long that out there in Las Vegas, you know, those people out there, they've been planting lawns. I mentioned this to you last time. It's true. You can plant redwood trees and irrigate them. It's not natural or normal. And you can grow banana trees, you know, in North Dakota. You know, if you want to, you can have orange trees in downtown Fargo if you want. But it's not natural and normal out there, and you're going to have to spend some money to create the environment in order to do that. And so in Las Vegas, they created the environment. They built a big dam, and then they started pumping the water out of the Colorado River so that they could irrigate sod lawns in Las Vegas, Nevada. Okay, well, as long as you got the water to do it, do it. But what happens one day if you don't have the water to do it? Well, then you got to change your lifestyle. Now, I mentioned to you, I said, as long as electricity is as cheap as it is, I ain't turning the lights off in my office. And when the price of the power gets to a point where I got to do it, then I got to do it. Now, I live in an area where I got plenty of water, and as long as I got plenty of water, you know, I'm just like everybody else. I'm going to take my 90-minute or my 30-minute shower and burn up 90 gallons of water. But when the deal gets down to where push comes to shove and the rubber meets the road, then I got to make some changes. You know, I'm smart enough to wake up to reality. Now, if I lived in Tucson, Arizona, I'd be more water conscious than I am here in Isabella, Missouri. And if I've got a drought here, I get kind of water conscious right away. Now, that's why I want to bring this to your attention, because, you know, out in the West, out in the Southwest, they've only got 12 inches to work with to start with. You people in Wichita, Kansas, you've already got twice as much water in a normal year. So when you get half as much water, you know, let's just pick you people in Wichita, Kansas. Instead of getting your normal 22 or 24 inches of rain, let's suppose you only get 12. Hell, that's a good year in Tucson, Arizona. And if the people in Tucson in a good year can live, you can live in Wichita in 12 inches. You might not grow much wheat this year, but it isn't going to affect your baths, and it isn't going to affect your lawn or your domestic water needs. You can have the full 80,000 gallons of water a year that you need there, and you can collect it right off your roof. Did you know that? Yeah, you can collect it right off the roof. Now, I mentioned last time, when you're talking about Arizona, Arizona has 13 cubic miles of water falling on it every year. 75% of it runs off into the ocean. Well, now, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out that if the people of Arizona could have 100%, you don't have to share a drop of the entire Colorado River with anybody. You'd only have, in a good year, you'd only have a third that much water. I mean, I'm telling you, if the people of Arizona could have all the water in the Colorado River, why, they'd be dancing a jig. They'd just be as happy as clams at high tide. And the Colorado River, at 15 million acre feet a year, is one-third the amount of water that's fallen on your state every year, and you let it run off. So the guy that wrote the book, let me tell you who he is again, it's Harvesting Rainwater by Brad Lancaster, Volume 1, writes a book and says, hey, listen, here's the way people do this in Australia. Here's the way people do this over in Saudi Arabia and other places in the world where it doesn't rain, you know, 30, 40, 50 inches a year. Now, 20 inches a year is called semi-arid. Did you know that? Hell, you people living out there in western Kansas are living in semi-arid conditions. Semi-arid. Now, when you get down below 20, well, they call that arid conditions. You know, I think it's 10 to 20 inches. That's arid conditions. And then, you know, as they go on up the line, you know, they say, well, you're living in normal conditions, and then they got tropic and temperate and tropical, and, you know, they got various names for these amounts of rainfall that you get. If you want a copy of this book, I'm going to give you a little information here. Brad Lancaster is one of those rare individuals who combines a practical ability to design and implement common sense solutions to rainwater management issues with a clear ecological and political vision of the importance of doing so. In Rainwater Harvesting for Drylands, Brad shows how to use rainwater around our homes and in our communities so that our human-created landscapes reflect the abundance of nature. As we move from assumptions to scarcity to participation in abundance, our lives and our communities can be transformed. So the bottom line to this is that, hey, there's plenty of water there. If you use it, just use it intelligently. It's called Rain Source Press, Tucson, Arizona. And they've got a webpage here. It's called www.harvestingrainwater.com. And I think that that's a good place to be from, Tucson, Arizona, where it rains less than 10 inches a year. And those people down there harvesting the rainwater, living their lives, they've got all the water they can use. They're not complaining a bit. Now, farmers are a little different story. Now, if you're a farmer out here in Georgia and, you know, you're trying to raise soybeans, you know, you live in Mississippi, Alabama, and then the Southeast, and you're trying to grow soybeans on 12 inches a year, you know, you can kiss that one goodbye. That ain't going to happen. I don't deny it. So if you've got a drought down there, you know, that's very, very serious to agriculture. Now, to your city cousins, they sit there and they laugh at you and say, we don't care. We'll just buy our grapes from Chile. We'll just buy our food from somebody else. And that's the city mentality. Boys and girls, you got some real rude awakenings coming up here. You got 6.5 billion other people in the world, and they all want to eat too. You ain't got enough to go around. It's kind of like anything else in life. You know, when you've got an abundance of it, it's not very important. When you get a shortage, go to the sink and turn on the faucet. And when no water comes out, you'll see how valuable water is. That happened to me a couple of years ago. Now there's another place you might go if you can't make contact here with Rain Source Press. I don't know if you can get this at Barnes and Noble or not. Maybe you can. I want you just to walk in there and tell them that you want copyright 2006 by Brad Lancaster, published by Rain Source Press, 813 North 9th Avenue, Tucson, Arizona, 85705. Once more, that's Rain Source Press, 813 North 9th Avenue, Tucson, Arizona, 85705. Or go to their website. It's www.harvestingrainwater.com. Now, you could also go to our friends down in Austin, Texas. Remember, that's bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. If you can't find it, you can't get it. They'll get it for you. All right. Now, in this short story here, here's a guy living on one of these junk lots out in the middle of the desert. And they build a 1,500-square-foot house, no utilities, and they put a cistern right in the middle of the living room. And I got a picture of it here in the book, and it looks pretty neat. It's a concrete tub. It's a great big bathtub. I don't know if they put fish in it. It looks like a great big aquarium here. And it's open. It's probably 3 feet tall. You can look into it. And then the picture here, it's about half full. They collect enough water and run it into the system to run their house. Now, you know, if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And you can do it easier. These people are getting 14 inches a year. You know, it isn't like biblical times when it didn't rain for 3.5 years in Israel. There's a story here. You can read it for yourself. It's in 1 Kings chapter 18. And there's a prophet by the name of Elijah. So Elijah, you know, he's the last prophet in Israel, he said. And it doesn't rain for 3.5 years. Now, when God sends us a drought, boys and girls, you're going to have a drought. So you haven't seen drought yet, but we're going to see some. A drought is where it doesn't rain at all for 3 years. That's a drought. That's a biblical drought. We're going to see some of those. And that's going to be tough. That's going to be nasty. That is going to cause evacuations. You don't have that yet. What you have is a diminution of rainfall. What you have in Georgia is it ain't raining 50, it's only raining 25. And then your lakes are drying up and your ponds. And you've been used to using water in such prodigious quantities, in such frivolous ways, like I do. And I don't deny it. I use water frivolously. My water drains off my land. I waste 75% of it, just like everybody else. But then I read this guy's book and I said, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I don't have as much drought as I thought I had. Maybe I'm just a big spoiled brat throwing a wall-eyed fit because it didn't rain as much here as I would like it to or that I'm normally used to. And so maybe I could live here after all. Now, after having read this book, I look at my situation. I look at my farm. I look at my house. I look at my land, and I say, you know, my problem is I'm not utilizing what I've got. I don't have any shortage of rain. I don't have any shortage of water. I'm wasting what I've got. Now, if I'd quit wasting it and start using it more intelligently, I'd have plenty. Now, to give you an illustration, this guy and these people are living down here in Arizona on 12, 14 inches a year. Well, I get 40 inches a year, 12, 24, 36. Hell, I get three times more rain than they do. So if my rain were to cut back by 50%, I'd be down to 20 inches. I'd have the same rainfall that you people have out in Wichita, Kansas. Hell, you people in Wichita are getting by all right, aren't you? When you get 20 or 24 inches, you're in Fat City in Wichita, Kansas. All right. So when I'm down to 20 or 24 inches, I could be just as much tall cotton as you guys are. Maybe not as good as I'd like it to be, but then, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Now listen to this. Designing around the assessed on-site resources of rain and sun is what has enabled Matt and Mary to live with modern comforts while consuming and paying for just a fraction of the off-site resources that their neighbors consume. Now, their neighbors over here are running generators. Now, I don't know if you know this, but boy, that's pretty expensive electricity. You know, if you're going to run a generator, you're going to have to shut the power off every once in a while. You got to shut that generator off every once in a while. I mean, that thing, you know, is consuming a lot of diesel. That thing's burning a lot of gas. And that isn't 5 or 6 cents a kilowatt hour power, you know. So these people are using solar power, just like the people in Germany, just like the people I mentioned to you in the last program. If you're not hooked up to the grid, which is kind of handy, kind of natural, kind of normal, but you know, we don't have to be hooked up to the grid to have electric power. And you don't have to pay an arm and a leg to do it either. The amount of money that I'm going to spend over the next 20 years will buy the solar system that I put in here. And of course, the bigger the solar system, the more it costs. You don't have to put in the super deluxe bells and whistles solar system. Put in a bare bones system for openers. Start learning to turn the power off, turn the lights off. And then as time progresses along and you get a little more money, then you put in a few more solar panels. Add a little more power. Put a little more. Add a little more power. Same thing with water. You don't start off, you know, with this super deluxe water system on day one. You start off slow and easy, and you put it in. And then you start harvesting some rainwater, and pretty soon you start harvesting some more, and pretty soon when you get down to the bottom line, pretty soon you're harvesting, you know, maybe half. You'll never get up to where you're getting 100%. But hell, you're wasting 75% now. So if you could just harvest half of the 75% that you're wasting, you're going to be in tall cotton. Even at 7 inches a year, you'll be in tall cotton if you can just save half. Save half. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on subjects such as law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station, but they should. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Harvesting Rainwater, published by some little rinky-dink publishing company down here, probably self-published, Rain Source Press, Tucson, Arizona. And they've got a web page. It's www.harvestingrainwater.com. Now, I'm covering a short piece in here of an actual on-site operation. The Matt and Mary are also directly connected with their beautiful desert surroundings, the source of their resources, and their need to keep consumption in balance. Now, these are the ideas that I encourage others to mimic, and why I feature Matt and Mary here. However, two of the specific techniques used on their site should be altered rather than duplicated. First, a closed exterior tank would be superior to the open living room tank. And that's because while the open water beneficially cools their home in the summertime, it also cools their home in the winter time, because as water pours in from the cold downspouts, the window and door screens, along with 10 mosquito-eating fish, take care of the potential mosquito problem that is associated with that open water. All right, let me pause here for a moment. You know, I've got water troughs, and I've got ponds all over my farm. Here in the Midwest, we use these ponds to water stock. And, of course, that's a natural breeding place for mosquitoes. So here's the way you solve the mosquito problem. I go down to Walmart and I buy some goldfish. You know those little 20 centers? You don't have to buy expensive ones, just a little cheap goldfish. I think we pay about 20 or 25 cents for these little fish. I get a dozen or two dozen of them. I come up and I put two of them in the water troughs. And then I throw a few out here into the ponds. Well, all of my ponds have these goldfish in them now, have for years. We don't have any mosquito problem here. You know, mosquitoes breed in tires. You got a tire out here that gets some rainwater in it. That's where your mosquitoes are coming from. They're not coming from the ponds and the water troughs. So if you thought that you're going to have all these mosquitoes breeding in this outdoor tank, well, just put a few fish in it. And that's what he's telling you here. Now, this water that they've got in their house is a pretty unique idea. They live in a very hot climate down here in the Southwest. In the summertime, it cools their house. Now, this is the reason they haul drinking water in from town also. And then I recently told them about various elastomeric paints, whatever the hell an elastomeric paint is, and roof coatings that are approved for use with potable rainwater catchment systems. So I've got a steel roof up on my house, and it's got paint on it. I don't see any reason why we can't drink the water off of that roof. Now, your roof has what they call a footprint here, and a pitched roof doesn't gain any more water than does a flat roof. And if you'll think about it for a minute, you'll see that my roof is about 6,000 square feet because it's pitched, but it only collects about 2,000 feet because that's the area that it covers, about 2,000 feet worth of space. It's 6,000, I'll take that back. That's the size of the house. It's about 3,000, about one-third more roofing area. Square feet of roof is up there, about 3,000 feet. Then there is a 2,000-foot footprint. But take 2,000 feet, and when an inch of rain falls on that 2,000 feet, and it runs off into your gutters, runs down your downspouts, and runs into your cistern. And these cisterns can get to be pretty elaborate. There's cistern systems where they've got them buried underground in concrete tanks. They've got them in tanks that are above ground. There's all kinds of these catchment systems. This one's kind of unique. It's in the guy's living room. Now, I don't know how much it holds. I'm just looking at the thing over there. I don't know if it holds 3,000 or 4,000 gallons, maybe. Built out of concrete right there in his living room. Great big. It's a part of the interior of their house. In other words, their house is built around it. That's what it boils down to. It's like having a great big thingy in the middle of your house over here, and you know, everybody's got one. You got a thingy that you're living around. In our house, it's bookshelves. We got an island out here that's got bookshelves in. Now, he says, strive to live in balance with your site, as Matt and Mary do, by first assessing your resources and needs. The first principle of water harvesting, long and thoughtful observation, and as you plan, what strategies and techniques that you plan to use to harvest your site's resources, persistently think of how the system is going to work as a whole. The last principle of water harvesting, how is this whole thing going to work as a whole? And then continually reassess your system, and then the feedback in the loop. The better your assessment, the better your system will be. And the following chapters give you some more tools to do just that. Now, there's a little story in here. I'm going to go back to chapter one now and read you a story here. There's a guy down in South Africa, black guy. He's got about 7 acres. And he lives in a place called Botswana land. And I think the average rainfall down there is 22 inches a year, about the same as Wichita, Kansas. 22 inches a year. In a bad year, he gets about 12. So in a wet year, he's about like Wichita, Kansas, 22 inches. And then in a bad year, it's about like Tucson, Arizona, and he gets about 12 inches. And this guy, they got pictures in here. This guy lives in what looks like a tropical paradise. And he doesn't have a well. He doesn't have any irrigation water. The only water he has on the 7 acres comes from the sky. I'm telling you, kids, you got to look at the pictures to believe it. And then maybe they're lying to us, I don't know, but he went down there, this guy Lancaster, he went down to South Africa and went out to this guy's place to interview and take pictures, because this guy has been harvesting rainwater for 30 years. 30 years. And he has a 7-acre site where he's collecting the water, and he's got big ponds that he can irrigate out of. He irrigates out of these big ponds. In other words, he moves the water that he's collected in a cistern called a pond to other areas. And most of it's done by gravity. I mean, this guy doesn't have electricity. He's out in the boondocks. It's all being done by gravity. And his ground is on a slope. Now his neighbors are living out in a semi-desert. They are living just hand-to-mouth. They're just dirt scrabble farmers struggling to get enough to eat. This guy is living in paradise. It's the craziest thing you ever saw. Now here's a little part of the story. Small dams yield more water than large dams. That's the headline. It's box number 1.5 on page 33. I read this little short story here and I said, oh my God, how can this be? How can this be? Wait a minute, hang on. How can a little dam collect more water, more usable water, than Grand Coulee Dam on the Columbia River? You know, we've been brainwashed into thinking that we got to have these huge projects. If this thing doesn't cost $5 billion, it ain't worth doing. Well, again, that's the big construction companies that are selling us these big construction programs. See, they go to Congress and they say, well, look, you got drought down here in Arizona. You need more water in Arizona, right? Okay. So let's take the water out of California. You know, let's get really get right with the program. Let's take the water out of the Klamath River and let's move it to Tucson, Arizona. That's the mindset of the George W. Ball Company. You know, now they haven't done that yet, but it isn't impossible. I imagine those guys, you know, if they put their minds to it, they'd do something like that. Hey, let's take the water out of the Columbia River and let's move that to Birmingham, Alabama. That's the solution to the drought down in the southeast. You know, you got a drought in Georgia. Yeah, that's a good idea. Sure. Let's just take the water out of the Columbia River. Let's go to Congress and let's just get some construction money. Now, that's the way we think in terms of look at all the jobs that it'll create and look at all of the economic activity that it'll create. But when you get through moving that water from the Columbia River to Atlanta, Georgia, you'll have less water than you people already have right there falling out of the sky. You got that? Now, if you want to spend $100 billion to move that water, get after it. But you can spend near nothing and collect 10 times more right there. Listen to this. Now, a study by the Central Soil and Water Conservation Research and Training Institute in Dehradun, India, they found that increasing the size of a dam's catchment from 2.5 acres to about 5 acres actually reduces water yield per acre by as much as 20%. If you double the size of the catchment area, you will reduce the amount of usable water that you're catching by 20% by doubling the size of the dam. The bigger the dam, the less water you will actually realize. How do we know that? Well, you know, some smart guys get together, they go to college and get degrees after their names, and then take a lot of grant money that comes from the government, and they go out here and they actually physically measure it. Now, you would think that, after having listened to all the propaganda all your life, that by building these humongous dams on these rivers, that's the way to go. But if you build 20 little dams, you'll actually realize more water than you will if you build one or two great big dams. And so they got together and they measured it, took a look at it, and they said, well, isn't that just real special? So now a guy like Lancaster comes along and he says, okay, wait a minute. Why don't we use these studies from these third world countries where these people are so damn poor they ain't got any electricity over there to pump water around, and let's go watch and see how do they do it? That's a wild new idea. Now, the George W. Ball Company and the average Joe Sixpack American sure is only going to India to find out how they catch rainwater and divert that without electric power and pumps and without ditches and Caterpillar tractors and humongous dams and humongous water projects that cost billions and billions of dollars and employ tens of thousands of people brought in from the Philippines and China to work on the project. No, we're not going to do anything like that. Now, listen to this. As the Center for Science and Environment states, in a drought-prone area where water is scarce, 10 tiny dams with a catchment of 2 acres will collect much more water than one larger dam with a catchment of 10 acres. The tiny dams don't need costly water distribution systems either, as they're already located throughout the watershed. And also, small dams displace far fewer people, and they cause less environmental damage than large dams. Let me pause right there. You know the Chinese are building this huge dam on the Yellow River? I don't know how many people they displaced, but it was in the millions. I mean, they got a dam that's going to back up a lake that goes back for a couple hundred miles. It kind of reminds me of that Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon Dam. I mean, those are big, big lakes. Call them reservoirs, but, you know, it's a big lake back there. Now, you know, we build these big projects, and then we build our infrastructure around them. And then when the Colorado River starts running like it did 400 years ago at about one-third or one-half, all of a sudden the water that we've been using and wasting all of a sudden goes down by about half. And then we sit here and wring our hands and go, oh my God, what are we going to do now? Now, if you went over that same watershed and you put in a lot of little dams, you'll actually collect more water than Grand Coulee or Glen Canyon. Now, that's kind of an eye-opener over here, but that's just where the reality is. Now, you can't get lobbyists on K Street in Washington, D.C. to run into the Congress and say, look, let's get ecologically friendly over here, and let's build a lot of little dams, you know, little inexpensive dams, and we can collect more rainwater, and we can distribute that rainwater to more people, and we can actually cause more good. No, hell, there's no money in that. Hey, kids, let's wake up, smell the coffee. There's no money in that. You're not going to get some big construction company out here saying, hey, listen, let's follow some ecologic plan. You're not going to get the Peabody Coal Company, for crying out loud, to come out here and say, hey, let's close down these coal mines. Let's put our resources into solar panels, and let's make every home in America energy-independent oven by itself, like they're doing in Germany. No. Peabody Coal and Exxon, no, they're making money selling coal. Union Pacific Railroad makes money hauling coal. And those are the people with the money, and those are the people with the influence, and those are the people that are buying your congressmen and paying them bribes, paying them campaign contributions so that they can get elected in the upcoming election again, so that they can enact more legislation to benefit Peabody Coal Company, Exxon, and Shell Oil. And, you know, that's the way the game is played. So I'm not going to change that. So I didn't come here, you know, to beat the tom-tom, stand on my chair here, you know, and preach Jesus. I said, well, what in the hell am I going to do? I'm not going to change Matt Blunt and the Republican Party of Missouri. What's George Gordon going to do on his little farm down here to harvest the rainwater that I've already got fallen on my ground? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go buy this book called Rainwater Harvesting. I don't know what the... Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. Maybe I do know what it costs. Yeah, I do. $24.95. Jot it down. $24.95. Now, I don't know where I bought this book. Hey, listen, this is distributed by the Chelsea Green Publishing Company. They got a phone number here. Their phone number is 800-639-4099. The Chelsea Publishing Company. They got a phone number. 1-800-639-4099. All right, the book is $24.95. They got a tag here on the back side of it. Now, fascinating book. The guy's got a number of good stories in here, just like I'm telling you now, about real life people that are actually doing this out there on their site. Now, if some guy, you people now, down here in Atlanta, Georgia, now if some guy out here in I don't know where, in Arizona, southwestern Arizona, where they get less water than they do in Tucson. Well, actually, he must be up in the hills. He's getting 14 inches a year. 14 inches. He's getting 14 inches. He's getting more rain than you people down in Atlanta, isn't he? Well, you people down in Atlanta, let's see, now you're getting about 50 inches a year, and it's cut in half. You're getting 25. He's getting 14. Hey, you guys are getting twice as much rain as he is, and he's not complaining. He's getting by quite nice. Now, you don't have a cistern, do you? You're not collecting the rainwater off of your roof, are you? Well, listen, in times past, you didn't need to. And that's why you don't have a cistern out there in your yard. It made all the sense in the world, but now you got half as much rain. Now it's time to turn the lights off, isn't it? You know, when the price of electricity goes up by about 3, 5, or 9 times, maybe I'll start turning off the power. Now, here's another example of tiny dams and the yield, even more water than small dams. While they were studying 4,000-year-old water harvesting strategies in the Negev Desert. All right. God, listen to this one. This Negev Desert over here is really dry. I mean, it's just nasty. In the Negev Desert, 4,000 years ago, you had ancient people. You know, if you went to evolution school, these were Neanderthals who were dragging their knuckles on the ground, putting in water systems in the desert, and living there, which we can't do in Atlanta. We got to evacuate. All right. While studying 4,000-year-old water harvesting strategies in the Negev Desert, which enabled ancient people to provide food and water with a scant 4 inches of annual rainfall. 4 inches. The driest place in America is Yuma, Arizona. So for you folks down in Yuma, Arizona, you live in the driest part of America. You only get 3.5 inches of rain per year. 3.5 inches. That's just about the same as the Negev Desert, where they get 4 inches of annual rainfall. This is Israeli scientist Michael of Evan Eri, found that small watersheds harvest far more water than large watersheds. Summarizing Evan Eri's findings, the book Making Water Everybody's Business. Now, I don't have that book, but I'm going to run that one by you again. There's a book out here called Making Water Everybody's Business. And evidently, the guy that wrote it is Michael Evan Eri, spelled E-V-E-N-A-R-I. That's E-V-E-N-A-R-I. Michael wrote a book called Making Water Everybody's Business. Here's what he says. While a 1 hectare watershed, 1 hectare is about 2.5 acres, while a 1 hectare watershed in the Negev yielded as much as 95 cubic meters of water per hectare per year, a 345-hectare watershed yielded only 24 cubic meters. Did you get that? Let me run that one by you again. A hectare is about 2.5 acres. So he says, if you have 1 hectare, about 2.5 acres, where you're only getting 4 inches of rain a year, it will yield about 95 cubic meters. That's about 95 cubic yards of water per hectare per year. Now, if you were to increase that to 345 hectares, see, in other words, here's a piece of real estate that's 345 times bigger, and we're going to harvest the water off of it. But we're only going to yield use one dam. It's only going to yield 24 cubic meters. Well, 25, 50, 75, 100, it's about 25% as much. You lose 75%, which is the thrust of the entire book. Boys and girls, we are wasting 75% of the water available by using these big dams and these big water projects. Can you follow that? So the systems used by ancient people in ancient times, and the system that this guy is advocating here, what we do is we take a piece of ground. Maybe it's an acre, maybe it's 5 acres, 50 acres, whatever it is. And we start collecting the water on small portions of it and channeling and using that water, and we'll get 3 or 4 times more yield. All right, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll be back again next time talking about this thing of harvesting rainwater, a wild new concept for Atlanta Georgians. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.